Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast, where I try to tell you a little bit about football and an awful lot about life. Or maybe that's a little bit in reverse. Anyway, we've got a good podcast for you this week. My guests are Chris Sims of NBC Sports and Bleacher Report. We always have a good session with Chris Sims, entering the playoffs every year. I love him because he says everything and he says anything. So he's fun to listen to. And also this week, Peter Schrager will get caught up on all of the coaching searches around the NFL in the wake of a particularly plentiful Black Monday. So I'm going to start talking about Black Monday and about the coaching changes. And the one constant refrain that I have heard in the days leading up to the coaching changes, as I record this, there have been 8 coach firings in the NFL between midseason and now, starting with Hugh Jackson and culminating with 6 more over the weekend and on Monday. So there's something that really irks me when I hear about Black Monday and when I hear this year that, and I quote, "There aren't any good candidates out there," end quote. Or, quote, "It's a really weak year for coaching candidates," end quote. Well, to that I say, that is a bunch of garbage. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you a few examples first, and then I'm going to explain why, in my opinion, that's a really, really bad take. Okay? First, let's go over a few names right now. Chuck Knoll, 1969, Pittsburgh Steelers. Nobody ever heard of Chuck Knoll, who was an offensive line coach at the time for the Chargers. And nobody heard of this guy. Everybody said, "Who's he? The Steelers don't know what they're doing." Let's go to Bill Walsh, San Francisco, 1979. Here's a guy who couldn't get the Bengals job a year earlier, and Paul Brown decided to give it to Tiger Johnson in Cincinnati. So Walsh left, and soon he's out there in San Francisco building the 49er dynasty. Let's go to 1983 with the New York Giants. They hire an unknown guy, a little-known guy, Bill Parcells. And after his first year, when he went 3-12-1, the Giants took off and won 2 Super Bowls under Parcells. How about Bill Belichick in 2000? People in the NFL were telling Robert Kraft, "Don't hire this guy. He's damaged goods. Forget him. He's had his shot." You know, even the New York Giants, where he was a great assistant, they don't want to hire him. Let's go to Mike Tomlin in 2007. I'll always think that Mike Tomlin never had a chance at this job until he walked in the door of the Pittsburgh Steelers and blew away Dan Rooney and the Rooney family. And you can quibble with Mike Tomlin's success in the last couple of years anyway, but I'll just tell you this. Mike Tomlin has a better winning percentage than either Chuck Knoll or Bill Cowher, significantly better than Knoll. And those are the 3 coaches in the last half century the Pittsburgh Steelers have employed. A year later, the Baltimore Ravens take a special teams coach from Philadelphia named John Harbaugh. He worked 1 year as a defensive backs coach, but mostly he was a special teams coach. And he's become one of the best coaches in the NFL. The last 2 I'll mention, Bruce Arians in 2013. There were 8 openings that year, and Bruce Arians had been turned down for 2 of them and didn't interview for the rest until finally he had dinner one night with Michael Bidwill and Steve Keim, the general manager of the Cardinals, Michael Bidwill, the club president, and they were convinced this is the guy we need. So they never won a Super Bowl, but they won a lot of football games with Bruce Arians. And then finally, my favorite one, 2018, the Indianapolis Colts are ready to hire Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator of the Patriots. What happens? He either gets cold feet, the Patriots blow him away with an offer, but whatever it was, 2 days after the Super Bowl, Josh McDaniels informs Chris Ballard, the general manager of the Colts, I'm not taking the job. I'm going to pull out. I can't apologize enough. I'm really sorry, but I can't take this job. So all of the musical chairs have been filled by that time. All of the prime candidates are out. So what's a general manager to do? Chris Ballard reopened the search, found a guy, the offensive coordinator of the Super Bowl champion Eagles, who had barely gotten a sniff in the original hiring process by any team in the league. And what happens? He interviews Frank Reich. He loves Frank Reich. He says, this is the guy. Why didn't I interview him before? I wish I had interviewed this guy before. And he ends up hiring Frank Reich. And the moral of the story is Frank Reich, after a tough start, finishes 9-1 with the Indianapolis Colts, culminating in a Sunday night win and you're in playoff type atmosphere game, Indianapolis at Tennessee. The Colts crush them, and now the Colts are headed to the wild card round of the playoffs this weekend at Houston. And I'm just going to tell you, the moral of this story is very, very simple. That if you don't think there are good candidates out there, that's on you. That is not on reality. That's not the reality of this situation. I can think of 3 guys right now who are extremely far under the radar that I believe if they get an interview, they've got a good chance of impressing somebody to the point where they would get a job offer. The first is Dave Tobe. He's the longtime special teams coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Known most likely as the best special teams coach in football, extremely smart about all areas of football. Andy Reid would trust him with his team. He loves Dave, and I believe it's long past time that he deserves a job. Number 2, Zach Taylor, 35 years old, a young, upcoming guy who served at the right hand of Sean McVay. Everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay. Well, interview Zach Taylor. And then I'm going to give you the next guy. He may not be ready right now. He turns 31 this month. His name is Press Taylor. He's the quarterback coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, maybe he is too young right now, and maybe he's not experienced enough either in play calling or whatever to get a head coaching job. But the reason I'm going to mention him, it reminds me of what Dan Rooney said to me when he hired Mike Tomlin. And I said, man, you really taking a chance with him, that whatever Tomlin was, maybe 34, 35 years old at the time. And he goes, it's better to get a guy a year too early than to get him a year too late. And if we didn't hire him now, I'd never have the chance to hire him again because he's going to be a head coach very soon. So my whole thing is, if you've got a conviction on a young coach, if you got a conviction on a young coach, take the chance. You know, the other thing is, the NFL has got to stop recycling coaches who failed somewhere else. And I'm not saying necessarily that you shouldn't hire Adam Gase now. I'm not in any way saying that. You ought to bring him in for an interview. But have an open mind and look at Adam Gase's experience in Miami. He was brought in to fix the quarterback there, and he never did. Now, obviously, he's had a lot of injuries with Ryan Tannehill. But he couldn't get either Tannehill or Jay Cutler playing at a high level. I'm not saying that should disqualify him for another job. I am saying that have an open mind, interview guys you don't No, please. Interview people you don't know. Chris Ballard didn't know Frank Reich. He thanks his lucky stars that the McDaniels thing happened now, because he knows that he got the guy who he wants to be a partner with for the next 10 or 15 years atop the Indianapolis Colts. So I don't know what, I don't know how far down the road that this is going to go, and I don't know who is going to get hired where. I really don't. But the one thing I would say is, if you're hiring a coach, have an open mind. Interview people you don't know. Interview people you've never, ever met. You never know who might be the next Mike Tomlin, who might be the next John Harbaugh, and who might be the next Frank Reich. And now my conversation with Chris Sims. Back on the Peter King podcast. So happy to be joined by Chris Sims of Bleacher Report. NBC. We seem to have an interesting conversation about once a year.
We do.
And
thanks for having me on, man. No, first of all, you're the big timer here. I'm just Chris Sims, a Bleacher Report.
Hey, wait a minute. I was not a third round NFL draft choice either.
Okay, come on. All right.
Hey, you know what? I've never really asked, even though I reported on this extensively at the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many people know who watch you on TV, who see you on TV. But in 2006, you were playing a football game.
Yeah.
I think about week three of the season.
Right.
You're playing a football game. You take a massive hit, and you're rushed to the hospital. It's a life-threatening spleen injury.
Right.
I've never heard the story. I want to hear the story.
And I've never seen the clip, because I know you were the one that first reported that I was in deep trouble.
I was.
Yeah, they always go, I mean— You know, we knew you were hurt, but then we heard Peter King on Sunday Night Football, or I believe it was Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, it was.
That I was in deep trouble.
Okay, so what exactly happened?
Second drive of the game, we had 23Z in called.
And you're on the Bucks.
I'm on the Bucks. We're playing the big bad Carolina Panthers, right?
Yeah.
It's Julius Peppers and Chris Jenkins and Thomas Davis, and they're a hell of a defense. And I'm about to throw a curl route to the left side. I believe it was Ike Hilliard, and linebacker kind of flashed in front of him. And I was going to throw an interception if I threw it. So I held it, and now I'm going to throw it out of bounds. And as I'm throwing it out of bounds, Chris Jenkins, who was a huge nose tackle, about 335 pounds, he hit me in the back. And Thomas Davis was coming right at me full speed. And I saw him coming. He was the one I was worried about. So I'm going to throw it out of bounds. But just as I was throwing it, I got hit in the back, and it opened me up. And I got stuck with my arm in the air as I was throwing. And Thomas Davis put his head right on my spleen, basically. Right in the part where—
His helmet?
Helmet, right where your quarterback doesn't have rib protection, really.
Right.
And— to say I got the wind knocked out of me would be an understatement. I was like in spasm. The next play, I had a wide open Joey Galloway, like a 20-yard out route, and I couldn't get it there to him. I skipped it on the ground like 10 yards. I mean, like looked like I was
because
like—
Because you couldn't breathe?
I couldn't like open up my abdomen or anything at that. It was like I'd gone into spasm and everything. But long story short, I was incredibly uncomfortable. I thought I maybe broke a rib and it was touching a lung. I didn't know what it was. But as the game went on, I kept getting worse and worse. I did a hard count in the third quarter, late in the third quarter, and as I was doing the hard count and going in motion, we're going to run 97 Seattle to Cadillac Williams. That was our play, which was like outside zone to the left, and the curtains were coming down. And I was underneath the center going blue 85, and I'm going, oh my gosh, I'm going pitch black here. And Dan Benning, our left guard, jumped offside, thank God. And I took a knee, and I had to go down. They brought me in to get an IV. I went in the IV, came back. I said, I'm going to play. We were 0-2, and I was not having a great year at that point, so I wasn't coming out. I wanted to keep playing. I drove us down what I thought was going to be the game-winning drive. They ended up kicking like a 50-yarder to beat us. But after the game was over, I mean, I was so pale and white. I have a picture of Jake Delhomme after the game shaking my hand, looking at me, because he's about to say, are you all right, dude? You don't look good. And I went in the locker room. I didn't even listen to Coach Gruden speak because I was so uncomfortable. I went right in the training room. They pushed around on me. They said, let's go to the hospital. Maybe it's your spleen. I went into the hospital. They put the CAT scan over
me. How'd you get to the hospital?
I got in just through—
Ambulance?
Yeah, ambulance. They threw me in the team, you know, the stadium ambulance there. I get in there. I go to the hospital.
Game was in Tampa.
Game was in Tampa. Hot.
How far away is the hospital?
Like 10 minutes. So it's very favorable that way. And I get there, the CAT scan gets down to about my pelvic region, and they run out of the room. And the way they ran out of the room, I was like, oh no, this can't be good. But then they were like, oh Chris, it's really bad. Like, we got to go to an emergency surgery right now. And they started cutting off my football pants, putting a catheter down my, you know, hole there, and I didn't have any medication in me. I want to talk about squirming a little at that point. But they brought my wife in to say goodbye to me because they weren't sure. I was bleeding internally, and I had lost 9 pints of blood, and it was all sitting inside my abdomen. And I was one of those things where, you know,
this game, was this a 1 o'clock game?
It was a 1 o'clock game.
So what time is this now? Maybe like 5:30 or something?
Exactly right. And I had been just slowly bleeding out throughout the day, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of those things where you get so uncomfortable that I couldn't breathe because of the pressure and the blood in my abdomen. And I was literally like, I mean, whatever you got to do. I can still remember seeing the surgery guy. He's like, you're going to be okay. I'll do my best. Well, and I was like, whatever. If you want to open me up with a machete right now, do whatever you got to do. I am so uncomfortable that I'll do anything. And next thing.
What'd your wife say to you?
I had just had my little girl who was only a few months old. And I just basically told her, like, you know, she came in and was like, I'm sorry, I hope you're okay. And I was just like, just go home, I'll be good. Go take care of Charlotte. I kind of said something like that. And that was that. Next thing I knew, I woke up and Bruce Allen and John Gruden were looking over me as I was coming out of like my coma.
What time was this?
I'm going to say like 6 a.m, maybe something like that the next morning. Yep. Wow. And then.
So what did they do to you?
What did they do? They cut me open from the bottom of my chest plate to my belly button. And basically had to open me up completely because there was so much blood in there and my spleen was so badly damaged, they had to completely remove it. There was no way to laparoscopically fix it all up. Yeah. And that was a game changer for me. And of course, it took me a long time to find the right people to get me back healthy. And I don't know if I was ever really the same even when I was healthy.
What about, after that happened, were you at all gun shy to get back under center again, ever?
I was not at all. You know, I grew up and my dad was Phil Sims and it was the Bill Parcells era. And I just, it was the price of doing business. I almost tried to come back that year. Uh-huh. I thought, you know what, maybe I can do this the last game or two and come back. And the doctor looked at me like I was crazy. And he's like, you guys are not even going to be coming close to the playoffs this year. Why would you come back?
Yeah,
and I was like, I don't know, because I'm a dumb meathead football player. That's what I do. But it took a while, and I actually got progressively worse from that point on, to where muscles started to shut off in my core, and I was like, damn, I went from having one of the strongest arms in the NFL to I'm in the backyard with my dad, and he's like trying to teach me how to throw again, because I had so many muscles that had atrophied and turned off that it really took me a long time to find the right people to kind of get me going on the right track again.
So that's 13 years ago almost. So what is the leftover from that? Is there anything today that you feel because of that?
I have to be careful with my immune system always. And I do have little, I feel like, core and lower back issues, maybe still because of the surgery that I feel like I never had until after that.
Yeah.
But the big thing is just the immune system. If somebody's got a common cold or got a cold sore or anything, and I'm the slightest bit like worn down or anything, I'm going to get it. Like all of a sudden I'll wake up the next day and be like, oh, I saw you yesterday and you had a cold sore and look at me. Now I got one on the corner of my lip. It's just, those are things that I have
noticed.
Because
that's what the spleen does. The spleen basically,
and disease. Yeah. It's real big for your immune system.
I've always wondered this about when you have a big injury in a football game, nobody's fault.
Nobody.
It just happened.
Right.
All right. What does Thomas Davis or Chris Jenkins ever say to you, if anything, whenever you see them again?
Thomas Davis, I've seen him before. He's like said sorry, but I'm also like you. It's football. You did what you were supposed to do. Exactly right. John Fox, I remember him reaching out to me at the time because he was the head coach of the Panthers, just telling me how much respect he had for me for hanging in there in the game. All those things. I think you earn respect. Everybody knows. Yes, it's the price of doing business sometimes, and that's what's going to happen playing football. And you move on. And
you've had some very frank things to say about Gruden over the years.
Right.
But kind of cool that he's there by your bedside when you wake up.
Definitely. I mean, Gruden and I had a little rough spot right after that, really. Right. And it wasn't, he was, you know, I was damaged goods and I wasn't going to be able to help the team out. And he was trying to move on. And I understand that part of it. I don't hold it personal to him. John and I have a good relationship now and all of that. It's just, hey, that's part of the business as well, as you know. It's just not always pretty. It's not always going to be a fairy tale Disney World ending. And that's it. But yeah, him, people try to blame the doctor, Joe Diaco, sometimes. You know, people try to do that. They weren't taking me out of that game. I don't care what. If they had to hold me a gun to my head, I don't know if I was coming out. It didn't matter. There was nothing they were going to do. A grown man at that point, all 26 years old of me, there was nothing they were going to do. I wasn't coming out. So
there You're was, your father's son.
Exactly. There was just there was no discussion. I mean, we were 0-2. I hadn't played good the first 2 weeks. Carolina was a division rival. And yes, I mean, there's just there was no way. I wasn't coming out.
You know what I'll always remember about your father? When the Giants got to the Super Bowl after the 90 season, the unlikely Super Bowl in Tampa, where they Matt Barr kicks 5 field goals to beat the 49ers, one of the best 49er teams of them all.
Yes, right.
And the Giants won with defense that day. Your dad either broken foot in December against Buffalo, hurt his foot.
Broken foot.
And so he was down at the Super Bowl. But because Bill Parcells did not want injured players anywhere near his team.
That's right.
I mean, Phil Sims, you know, the greatest quarterback in the history of the New York Giants, is not going to be there to help Jeff Hostetler try to win that game. Sims, just get out of here.
Get out of there. Watch the game in the tunnel. Don't get on the sidelines.
And I've always wondered about that because I had dinner with him that year at the Super Bowl, I think maybe Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Right.
And I was incredulous that Phil Sims couldn't be involved.
Right.
So what?
Crazy.
What did you think of that?
That was a tough time for me. I mean, that was one of those things where I was rooting for the Giants, of course, but I was really upset too. Like, I had mixed emotions, you know. That's why I fell for Carson Wentz last year, because it was the same type of thing. And even in the NFC Championship game against the 49ers, I hated the 49ers. Like, there was no way I was rooting for them. Love the Giants, but I was also, you know, I'm a 10-year-old kid at the time. And I had a pretty good feel for the NFL, and I'm going, man, they're going to go out to the Super Bowl with my dad. Like that. So it hurt my heart.
Yeah.
But I was in the stands that day rooting so hard for the Giants to beat the Buffalo Bills. It still was a special day. Of course, not as special as that January and at the Rose Bowl in 1987, right? But
what are you, 7 years old then?
Six and a half.
Do you have a great memory of that day?
I got a great memory. I really just signed my first autograph that day.
Wow.
Some good old, you know, stick letters on the cover of some game day guide. I can remember playing catch in the end zone after the game was over, you know, waiting for my dad to come out of the locker room to greet his family, and he never greeted us. He just got on the bus and went back to the hotel. We had to get on the bus to go back to see him.
Wow.
But yes, and to speak to your injury thing with like Parcells, that's the way they do it. That's the Giants. Parcells, Belichick is the same way. You don't see injured players on the sideline for the New England Patriots. They make them go sit in a box in the stadium because they just don't want any nonsense. They don't want the guy who's not focused on the game talking to the guy who should be focused about, you know, hey, last night I was blah, blah, doing this or whatever when you're supposed to be focused on this. So they try to get that riffraff out of there.
I always thought it was interesting when Parcells, when he got to the Dallas Cowboys, he had the thermostat in the trainer's room set at like 60 or something like that. So everybody's like, man, it's cold in here. Turn it up. Nope. No, because we don't want it to be comfortable in here.
Nobody's going
to
be comfortable if you're hurt. You're going to be in a hurry to get the hell out of here. And yes, that's the way it was. You had to go in there with a winter coat on. I can remember it.
Yeah. Talking to Chris Sims. So let's
talk. We got off track there. So.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But anyway, let's talk just a little bit about this season. I think it's been a totally, totally fascinating season.
Yeah.
My favorite team, my favorite story of this year, just from writing about it, being around him, is the Cleveland Browns.
Sure.
And I want your honest to gosh truth. On April 1st last year, if we were doing a discussion right then, what would you have said about Baker Mayfield, and what would you say about Baker Mayfield now?
Yeah, right. Okay, so I still had questions about Baker Mayfield. Recognize this talent. I will say, even out of the 5 first-round quarterbacks, I had him ranked number 3 because I did question the size factor a little bit. The second half of the Georgia game did scare me a little bit when he was made to look small and they kept him in the pocket. And I said, ooh, you know, there's just not a lot of the guys with that formula that have been successful. And as an evaluator, it was a question of my mind. Now, you know, the intangibles as far as being a leader and his arm talent, I saw that. I mean, he was a special thrower from day one. I saw him in person when he was at Texas Tech before he even transferred. But the big thing is, I think there I had those questions. And when he finally got to come in that Jets game, Peter, I mean, first of all, I thought right away there was a difference in his arm compared to Sam Darnold, who I think Sam Darnold is on the right track as well. But all of those things, I guess Baker has been even better than I expected. And he deserved to be the number one pick of the draft. And John Dorsey deserves a lot of respect for making that move when people were being critical of it. And he, I'm not going to say he's the rookie of the year. I would give it to Saquon Barkley. But his imprint on Cleveland and what he's done there, and I think to what everything you're talking about, is phenomenal, and the future is really bright for them.
I'd give it to Mayfield, and I'm going to give it to my vote is going to be to Mayfield, yeah. Just because, look, I'm a little bit prejudiced toward quarterbacks because, in my opinion, a great quarterback can influence your team so much more than a great running back.
Yes,
and
yes.
Saquon Barkley is unbelievable.
Right.
Anybody who votes for him for anything is a fine vote for me.
Yeah, right.
But I just think, God, the Cleveland Browns, the woebegone Browns, winning seven games this year, it's totally ridiculous.
It is.
I'll give you a little thing about Mayfield that really sticks with me. I was in Cleveland for the draft.
Yeah.
And the day after they picked him, I met and had a long conversation with Elliot Wolf, who's Dorsey's right-hand guy. He's Ron Wolf's son.
Sure.
Got a great future. He's going to be a GM somewhere, sometime. And I remember him telling me that the four people who mattered the most in John Dorsey's orbit, personnel orbit,
right,
John Dorsey, Alonzo Highsmith, who's gotcha. Also in their
sure.
personnel staff,
right.
Elliot Wolf, and Scott McLuhan, who was a consultant to the organization
right.
at the time. He gave them all the tape of all the quarterbacks, and he said, go and do it. Now, Elliot Wolf had already done it because in Green Bay, with Aaron Rodgers being 34 years old, they were looking at quarterbacks too. Not to take one high, but here, just evaluate the quarterbacks
sure.
this year.
Right.
And so all four of those people independently said, I don't want you talking to anybody about this. I want you to go watch these guys and come back. And when we meet for our pre-combine meetings in like the week before the combine in February, I want your opinion on all these guys.
Right.
And four for four, they had Baker Mayfield number one.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why everybody said, gee, that's a great decision by Dorsey, and it was. But at the end of the day, I don't think it was a hard decision by Dorsey, because if Elliot Wolf, Alonzo Highsmith, and Scott McLuhan all tell him that we think Mayfield is the best guy,
sure.
then, you know, and he thinks Mayfield is the best guy,
then that's
whatever.
A slam dunk, right.
So I want to ask you one other sort of current events question
yeah.
before we get into the games a little bit. If you had to hire a coach
mm-hmm.
in this hiring cycle, and as we record this New Year's Eve afternoon in New York, there's eight openings as of now.
Yeah.
Do you have somebody out there who you say, I really think this guy's going to be a good head coach in the NFL one day?
All right. So I still believe in Josh McDaniels to say
yep.
that. I'll say that right off the bat. And I'm intrigued by him to Green Bay, because I would love to see Aaron Rodgers in that offense. I think Josh McDaniels, yeah, I'm going to go with both New England guys who I think a lot of. And not just because I know them or anything like that. There's other coaches I know in football.
Just so that people know, you worked
in New England yes.
for
15
year and a
months.
Half.
Yeah,
yeah,
18 months.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Basically, and yeah, worked under Josh. But both of Josh McDaniels and Brian Flores, they are, to me, two legit candidates that I have always thought are head coaching material. And I know I was with Josh in Denver, so I got to see that. And there was things that went on behind the scenes there that I don't think the public realizes went on. And there were some issues. And also, I think he would tell you he would have done some things differently as well. But still, I think he's one of the best offensive minds we've seen in football over the last 15 or 20 years. And he is, like a Flores, a true New England guy, where we always have the conversation about New England guys where we go, why don't they succeed in other places? Well, a lot of the times I would tell you because the Romeo Crennels and, you know, the
Charlie Weiss
of the world, they only know one department. They were only offensive in New England, and they don't really – and New England will keep you in the dark if that's not your department. Bill knows everything, and everybody else just knows their little area for the most part. Guys like Flores and McDaniels came up from, you know, what I call like the bitch boy positions. I'm not trying to be offensive there, but
right.
Tufts bottom like me, breaking down film, what I did. You're stuck in a corner of the building, and they got to see every facet of the organization and really understand how it worked. That's why I think they can be really successful. So those are like two guys that I think I always hold in high regard.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to throw some other names in there, I think Chris Richard is probably another name I would throw in Dallas.
Dallas defensive coach, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, shown creativity, shown that his defense can be consistently good no matter where he is, no matter who the personnel is. So those are guys other than like the Mike McCarthys and mainstream guys. And I'll throw another name out there that I just think is head coach material. Dan Campbell, what he
yes.
did in Miami, I know he might not get another shot this year. I don't know, but I know that I do know enough about him, have met him enough times and know people that know him. To just know that he's got the, let's just say he's the, I think the offensive version of Mike Vrabel, right? Mike Vrabel was the tight ends or the linebacker
that
version.
That is an incredibly excellent way to put who Dan Campbell is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And those are guys that, out of the mainstream names that I think always go, if they just get a shot, and I know Josh, it would be his second shot, I go, I really think they will be successful.
Yeah. I want to ask you this question just as... as an observer of the scene, and then we're going to get into the games quick. But I wanted to ask you this thing. So the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers breakdown, right. or whatever you'd call it, breakup, I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But I'm going to presume something right now.
Yep.
And I'm going to say, when I watch Aaron Rodgers, I think of a guy who wants to be coached and who wants a nutty professor, an imaginative guy with him, who he wants to be sort of challenged and he wants to do new things. I think the Green Bay Packers were extremely unimaginative and offensively stale. And I think that Aaron Rodgers sort of mirrored that with his play. To think that a Green Bay Packers team with Aaron Rodgers starting 16 games would have won six is shocking.
Right.
I would say, oh, well, you must have been playing with Green Bay High School. You know, how can that happen?
Right.
So in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers watches a lot of the imaginative stuff going around in the NFL and say, why don't we do that?
Exactly.
And I want to ask you, you watched Aaron Rodgers this year.
Yeah.
What did you see and what do you think he needs?
Right. Okay. First of all, I think your opinion for everything I evaluate, not saying I know everything in the world, but you know I study football and watch film, and I've certainly been around a lot of good offensive minds and been taught by them and feel like I know a good offense when I see it. I think the first thing you have to say is, yes, I like Mike McCarthy, the head coach. Mike McCarthy, the offensive play caller or offensive play designer, is not my favorite person in the world. He's really not. You know, whereas teams always
detailed. Do you think he's too regular?
I think he's too regular. I always go back to the phrase of they are still running the 1997 Brett Favre West Coast offense. It's just basic West Coast offense where I can promise you guys like Bill Belichick, Mike Zimmer, those guys, where they've been around it for so long and they had to face Bill Walsh, they know that offense just as good as Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers does. They know the rules. Other West Coast guys who have been successful, let's say Sean Payton or Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, yes, it's West Coast based, but they've added their own, you know, footprint to it to go, I do this also along with it to make it not just the West Coast, but I have my own wrinkles to add on to the West Coast. And Green Bay is as basic as it gets. It is what we would call in the NFL day one, day in, day two installation. All your basic plays you put in the first day the rookies are in training camp and all that, that is really the meat and potatoes of the Green Bay offense. Let alone there's not a lot of talent around him. Davante Adams is a good player, don't get me wrong, but teams aren't playing Green Bay going, man, if we don't double Davante Adams, we're really in trouble. No run game. And Aaron Rodgers, who you know, I think you know, I think is the greatest quarterback of all time, a lot of because of what I'm saying. He carries this team for the last 6 to 7 years with just his physical ability, and we see him dance around and sit there in the pocket and do that. He's not doing that because he wants to look cool. He's doing that because nobody's open a lot of the time. This year, was it his best year? Definitely not. There were some moments where I was like, man, that guy, you hit your fifth step, throw it to him. But I also think that he's been scarred by people not being open so much of the time. Pass protection was an issue this year consistently throughout the year. And, yeah, it led to less than stellar Aaron Rodgers-type play. But it gets magnified in Green Bay because it's always about him, and it's about him making magic. And we could watch, and I'm not trying to knock anybody here with this comment, we could watch Jared Goff or Drew Brees or Tom Brady, and they would miss some of the throws Aaron Rodgers would miss. But we don't make a big deal about it because the next play, there's another wide-open guy, and we just go, yeah. Oh, they got the first down. It's not that big of a deal. In Green Bay, we go, damn, he's the first guy we've seen open. How did he miss him? And are they going to get anybody open again? And that's where I look at it, and I think you're right. Rodgers is starving for – he doesn't even know what he doesn't know. I say that to Mike Florio on PFT. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He's never had anybody else to teach him, like,
yeah.
This is how we've gotten Edelman open 900 times over the last 5 years.
Can I tell you something? Yeah. You'll probably – I think you will recognize this when I tell you this, but the first year that McDaniels was in Denver, I went out to do a story, and I got to sit in on a quarterback meeting.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. It was Kyle Orton, Tim Tebow.
So that was his second year. Because I would have been there the first year.
That's right. That's right. It was Kyle Orton,
right.
Tim Tebow.
Brandstatter? Brandstatter?
No, like he wasn't there. He wasn't there. But Adam Gase was in there.
That's right.
And Mike McCoy was in there.
Yes, they were.
Okay. And there was one other quarterback, and I forget. But I will never forget, they sat in there, it was maybe like a 90-minute meeting, and I'm paraphrasing this, it was whatever, a decade ago.
Yeah.
But Josh McDaniels says, I want to explain to you about this offense. Because they were just starting from scratch. This was 2 weeks after the draft.
Right.
Okay? He said, I'm going to explain to you about this offense. Every time you go back to pass, or you're in the shotgun and you take the ball, every time there will be at least one receiver open.
Right.
That is a guarantee.
Right.
But you don't have much time at all to hit him.
Yeah.
That's why the decision-making process in this offense, if you're not fast, you can't play here.
Right.
So you better learn everything. When I give you a play and you understand the play, you're going to have 2 seconds to understand everything about the play and then to hit the open guy.
Right.
That's it.
Yes.
Because if you wait a half second longer, he's not going to be open anymore.
Right.
So that is to me what I think has been missing in Green Bay.
I would agree.
I don't believe from watching them play, I believe many times, because it's interesting, the Packers play a lot of national games. There's a lot of cameras on them. So Randall Cobb, there's going to be an ISO camera on Randall Cobb and Davante Adams.
Right.
And how many times have you seen on replay either the cloud camera that can see everything, and you don't see a guy either open at all or open enough to take that risk?
Exactly right.
And I just keep thinking to myself, if McDaniels is true, if he's right, that means you can have a mediocre receiving group. And the Patriots, to put it charitably, have a mediocre receiving group.
Yes.
But they're usually going to have a guy open that Tom Brady can find, whether it be Chris Hogan or Cordarrelle Patterson or whoever the flavor of the week is, Philip Dorsett.
Yeah, right.
And so you don't have a great group, but usually you're going to have that. So I just ask you that. I mean, what do you think of that? Is that right?
I do think that's right. I think that's why we see Aaron Rodgers back there holding the ball, because he's going, well, yeah, I could jam it in there, and maybe Randall Cobb catches it while he's very securely covered, but maybe the defender gets his hand in there and bats it in the air, and then it becomes an interception. And then we go, oh, look at Green Bay. They're in trouble here because Aaron Rodgers throwing interceptions. So he is really grown in the offense to realize, you know what, I'm good enough to just sit back here. And if they're not wide open right off the bat, I'm going to dance around, and I'll wait till I can see something clearly to throw the football. Because more times than not, when I break down Green Bay film, and anybody ever listens to my podcast or anything like that, I sit there and go, okay, this is the 20th time he's dropped back. And 19 out of the 20 times, nobody's been open when he's supposed to throw it yet. And what, you know, Troy Aikman early in the year, he made comments in the Chicago game. Look, there's nobody open. You know, I remember my dad doing it 2 years ago. Look, there's no separation. So that's what's amazing about Aaron Rodgers to me is he is not given the benefit of guys like, you know, McVay or Breeze.
How amazing is this?
Yeah.
If Ty Montgomery doesn't take the ball out of the end zone against the Rams, Green Bay, I'd say, almost certainly wins. They only have to go 35 yards to get in field goal range to win the game against the Rams.
I try to remind people this all the time. How many times? This whole season could be different between that, the fumble up in New England when they're about to take the lead, the fourth and two punt in Seattle. So there was three instances where we go, man, we're waiting for Rodgers to take over to spark the team. And they took the ability to spark
it away
up and go, and he never got to do that. And then they end up 6-10.
You're right. In New England, 17-17.
They got the mojo going,
quarter,
right?
They got it going.
Yes.
And
they're driving.
Adams, or I forget, Williams.
It was a running back, Aaron Jones, I believe.
Aaron Jones, fumbled. Right. And the Patriots got it. Patriots went
by
down
two score,
touchdowns.
And that was it. That's it. Yep.
Okay, so let's. I want to spend one paragraph on each of these games this weekend.
Cool.
And I want to ask you, let's go in order. Indy at Houston. I'm kind of fascinated by Indy right now, and I would be worried if I were Houston. Their offensive line stinks. And Deshaun Watson got sacked 58 times this year.
Yeah.
58 times.
That's insane.
So I kind of like Indy in this game. Give me your thoughts.
I'm with you there, too. I think this is a bad matchup for the Houston Texans. I bet you when they saw them win last night, they went, damn, are you kidding me? Because the first thing I thought of is, what's the greatest thing? I mean, Deshaun Watson's awesome. We know that. But the greatest unit on their team is that D-line. And it kind of gets muted against the Colts O-line. The Colts O-line, I just saw them a few weeks ago protect all day long with that group. I saw them protect with Dallas Cowboys. The Colts O-line is maybe the best in football. They're in that conversation.
How crazy is that?
Right? Isn't that
crazy?
How crazy after 3 years ago, we're going, Andrew Luck gets killed
they
all
fired
game.
Ryan Grigson because of that offensive line.
It's amazing. But between that and then the Texans' pass defense is not good on the back end.
Right.
They have issues there. So that's not a good combo to face Andrew Luck and that offensive line. And then, like you're saying, on the other side of the ball, they only run the ball in the week, the Houston Texans. They kind of feast on the week, and they don't do much against the good defenses.
Yeah.
And it's Hopkins and Watson. When I watch the Texans, I just go, if anybody doubles—
DeAndre Hopkins, the best receiver in football.
He's certainly up there.
Man,
he's the best covered receiver I've seen. Oh, he's got the best hands in football.
The hands are unbelievable.
Why would you not double-team him on every big passing situation? Because Watson wants to go to him every time.
He's unbelievable. How about he catches 12 balls mostly on Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah, no.
I mean, come on.
He's special.
He's really good.
He really is. I give the Colts the edge too, though, just in my Tuesday morning thought.
Yeah,
that would be it, yeah.
Seattle at Dallas.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't really realize last night, writing my column, it's like 1:30 in the morning. I'm going over. I just look at all the stats for every team. I say, holy crap, the Seattle Seahawks rushed for 2,500 yards this year.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm wondering if they just simply say, we're going to play a New York Giants 1986 football game where we're just going to put it in the hands of Joe Morris 38 times and say we're going to play clock ball and not let Ezekiel Elliott touch the ball more than 16, 18 times. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the way I might play if I were Seattle.
I don't think that's crazy. I mean, that's the way they want to play kind of. Okay, we're going to run the ball. We get a one-on-one shot. Russell's going to hit a Lockett or a Baldwin down the sidelines and make you pay for it. That's kind of what they want to do. It's an intriguing matchup. They're really similar teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just their mantra of their team. Sound defense. It's not overly creative. It's just about hustle, tackle, do your job. We're not going to trick you. You know, on offense, they both want to run the ball. I look at it as similar teams that Dallas is just a little more talented, and I get worried about Seattle on the road. They've been a different team on the road right. this year. So that's probably where I favor Dallas.
Yeah.
But that running game is scary. I mean, Seattle has gone back old school beast mode, and Russell Wilson's scary. So if we can't, you know, we see each other next week and we go, oh, Seattle pulled that out, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
You know, especially with number 3.
I think this is really almost a 50-50 game. I'd probably pick Dallas too, but
I think
it's close.
It is.
Chargers Ravens, best game of the weekend. And, you know, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
When you look at the Baltimore Ravens, so I'll tell you about a quick conversation I had after the game on Sunday with Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Talked to him for 5 minutes, no more than that. And I said, Lamar, over the last 7 games, you guys, since you've been the quarterback of this team, your team has run it 65% of the offensive snaps.
Right.
I said, that's a lot even compared to the old Packers, the old Browns of the 50s and 60s.
Right.
They didn't even run that much. And he you could tell he didn't like that. He goes, hey, he says, I can pass the ball too. We're throwing the ball really well. And they're not throwing the ball really well, but they're throwing it okay.
They're effective to where you have to respect
it. Yes,
yeah. Yes.
But I guess what I'm saying is, we've never seen a team like this since I've covered the NFL.
Right?
For half the season, they run 2 out of every 3 plays. It's incredible.
It's incredible. I find it really refreshing in
Me
this
too.
Day and age,
it's fun.
Too, right? Because I know you and I did not like 58-54
yeah.
Rams-Chiefs. That's not
yeah.
our cup of tea. At least it's not mine. I know
right.
that. I enjoy watching Baltimore style. I feel like we're watching like Oklahoma or Nebraska
yeah.
wishbone offense. It's just the NFL version. I give Greg Roman a lot of respect for bringing that element into it, the Colin Kaepernick offense over there to Baltimore. He's the run game coordinator there. But Baltimore's an intriguing team. Their defense is, of course, in the convo for best defense in football. They're one of the few teams that has the corners that can match up across the board with a team like the Chargers. The size of their football team, I'm sure you've seen Baltimore in person. Mm-hmm. They're one of those teams where you go, man, if a bar fight broke out about all 32 teams, I would pick Baltimore to be in the Final Four. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just so big that way. But yes, he has really, I think, been extremely impressive, and he's a gifted runner. And everyone talks about the hits he takes, and I would just go back to what we were just talking about a minute ago, and I go, I think Deshaun Watson takes more big hits on a weekly basis than Lamar Jackson.
I agree.
Lamar avoids the big car crash hits.
Yeah.
It's still
plus Lamar gets down, too.
He does. He gets down. He gets out of the way of just getting hit square all the time.
Yeah.
So that's an awesome game. I favor the Ravens, but I don't feel comfortable about
it.
Because the Chargers did get to see that attack one
time.
In
so many ways, I mean, I don't know why. I love the Ravens. I think they're so much fun to watch right now. But on the other side, I find it to be incredibly unjust that, I mean, if you went to Vegas right now and had to bet one way or the other, I would probably bet that Philip Rivers will never win a Super Bowl. And I just would kind of like to see him win a Super Bowl,
Right.
I just, because he's been such a good player.
Yep.
I like him as a guy. He's a real feisty, tough, trash-talking dude on the field.
Right.
He's just, I'd like to see him. Yeah.
I almost feel a little like John Elway-ish with him. You know, like how in that 97 season, I was just like, I became a Broncos fan. And even though I love Brett Favre, I was like, damn, they got to win one for John. I mean, I was like saying that. And I feel that way too. Like, I feel like if they win this weekend, I might be like, okay, let's go Chargers. Or at least pull to see a Charger Saints Breeze River Super Bowl. That could be really cool.
So Philly, Chicago, as I wrote in my column, my heart says Foles, my head says Khalil Mack. I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that game?
I think that I would say the Bears are the second best team in the NFC. I would put them ahead of the Rams, just the way the year ended, the way they play. The Bears are a complete football team. People are going to question Mitchell Trubisky.
Rightfully so.
I get it. It's not perfect. And, you know, the biggest problem is he was drafted before Watson and Mahomes. So that's going to be the biggest issue he's going to have to deal with forever. But I do think they're a dangerous football team. I think they match up really well with Philadelphia. Philadelphia knows dangerous and hot. But I look at the Bears O-line and go, they can slow down Fletcher Cox and company, and I worry about the Eagles' secondary. And then when you flip it around, I say, hey, the Eagles' O-line is good, but that Bears' D-line is special, and their whole defense is special. I think the Bears' defense is the best in the NFL at home, in Chicago. I do favor them. I would not be shocked if we saw Chicago in the NFC Championship game down in New Orleans, you know, 2 weeks after this.
Be a heck of a game.
You know, because I do think that the Bears are a horrible matchup for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Sims, we had some fun. I said 18 minutes and we went 39. Sorry about
that.
You
like me. Double.
It's now time to go celebrate New Year's Eve. What are you going to do?
I got some family in town, but yeah. I'm going to get after it a little tonight. I'm going to break out some tequila and maybe something else that I like to do on my free time.
I'll tell you what, you'll be doing that, and I'll be sawing some heavy logs about 10:30. I'm never very good.
You're sawing logs?
No, I mean, I'm falling asleep. Gosh. I'm falling asleep. I mean, I'm snoring, I think. No, I'm never very good on Monday after staying up most of the night on Sunday. So we'll just go out, have an early dinner, and avoid crowds. So
yeah, I'm anyway. Trying to avoid the crowds with you. But happy New Year, and thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks a lot, Chris. This was great.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And now my conversation with Peter Schrager. Back on the Peter King podcast, happy to be joined by Peter Schrager, the excellent Good Morning Football quad host. I think there are four hosts in there, and also Fox Sports has done a excellent job as a reporter on NFL games, and is one of my favorite guys. So anyway, Peter, thanks so much for joining me.
Total honor, especially as we head to the playoffs and the coaching season, for you to bring me in, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah. So I thought what we might do is just spend a paragraph on each one of the coaching vacancies, basically, and some other places where there might be vacancies or there might be some tumult. And maybe we could just go over these, talk about them for a minute, and then see what we have left at the end. And also understand, people, we're recording this on New Year's Eve at about 11:30 in the morning or whatever time it is, 11:40 in the morning. And basically what we're doing is we might get overtaken by the news. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday and something has happened in the meantime, sorry. All right. So anyway, here we go. Why don't we just start with the opening that I consider the best one, and that's the Cleveland Browns. And just ask you, which is totally bizarre, there's eight openings as we speak. In an average year, in another year, two, three, 4 years ago, Cleveland would have been 9 out of 8. But anyway, what do you think of Cleveland right now, and what direction do you think John Dorsey, the general manager, might go in?
I had a really good experience 2-3 weeks ago. I did the Saturday night game with Mike Tirico and Kurt Warner for NFL Network, and we did Broncos versus Browns. So I had this cool opportunity to really speak with Greg Williams and speak with Baker Mayfield. And then before the game, speak with John Dorsey, speak with Jimmy Haslam, kind of do the rounds. And I find that job to be so fascinating. And Greg Williams is going to interview for that job. Freddie Kitchens will have a chance to come back, and maybe he'll interview for the head coaching job as well. But asking around the league, everyone's looking at it. It's a beautiful blank slate of a great young quarterback with a lot of bravado and a lot of confidence. And then this roster that, because of the groundwork laid by Asashi Brown and obviously John Dorsey the last draft, they've got talent at every position. So, yes, Peter, I think it is the most coveted job. The question is, how are they going to go about this? And does the owner play the primary role? Because Jimmy and Dee Haslam historically kind of run these searches and been the final word. Or do they really let John Dorsey, who is a great evaluator of player talent, do they really let him run this coaching search and put the full authority in his hands? I think the other wild card is, you know, Jimmy and Dee have a daughter. They're married to a guy named J.W. Johnson. He took an executive role with the Browns this past year. He has been playing more of a role. I'm really interested to see how this interview process goes. And once they start bringing in names from the outside, we'll know if this thing is a mess like it's been with Cleveland in recent years and there's been a lot of questions about the process and who's making what decision, or if this thing is as kosher as it seems and that John Dorsey's going to be running point and they're going to be bringing all valued candidates and everyone's going to get a fair shot to get this deal.
I always tell people in the last month or so when this job has come up, I said, look, I don't know Lincoln Riley. I don't know anything about him. I wouldn't know him if he walked in the room, other than the fact that I've seen him on TV a few times. But I do know this about John Dorsey. He loves Oklahoma. He loves the place. And he's got sources there. He's got friends there. He's a big, big 12 guy. And so all I can say is, I will not feel that Lincoln Riley is out of the running for this job until the Browns actually hire somebody not named Lincoln Riley. I have no clue whatsoever about that, but I just find the connection interesting.
Here's my pushback on that, and it has nothing to do with what the Browns have told me, but just Lincoln Riley in general. At no time has he ever stepped in an NFL locker room or been around an NFL team. Sometimes that works. We've seen in recent years. Sometimes it doesn't. I would just wonder if, okay, John Dorsey likes Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield played for the guy. He's a Heisman Trophy generator with these past two with Kyler Murray and Baker. But when you're a 35-year-old man and you're walking into a locker room with a bunch of young men who are professionals and walking into an organization having never, ever done the job, you better hope John Dorsey is going to walk him through that and that maybe he can hire some veteran defensive coordinator that can kind of been there, done that, a la what Wade Phillips was to Sean McVay.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wouldn't care too much about that. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Let's go to Green Bay, where Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, are making the rounds, have already done a couple of interviews. It was reported over the weekend, I forget by whom, that Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach, was on their list, and they were going to talk to him. Gut feeling about the Packers?
Yeah, really cool job if you appreciate history and tradition. And the Packers, obviously, with Lombardi, Holmgren, McCarthy, and the wonderful title town thing. And also, if you really appreciate the greatest player in the game and the opportunity to coach, that doesn't come around too often. The other nice little wrinkle here, and I think it is a good positive, there's no owner. There's no singular guy that you need to really take complete, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, and have to answer to after a loss every Monday. Mark Murphy's the president and CEO, but he doesn't own the team. This is a team that doesn't have that pure Jimmy Haslam, Stephen Ross, or even a Christopher Johnson where you have to answer to this person. That could be seen as a positive in a lot of ways. I will say this, the roster is not up to snuff and is not where a Cleveland roster is or even some of these other teams that these jobs are opening up. You're going to have to really rebuild, but you do get the Rodgers thing. And the one note I have about Pat Fitzgerald on this, and I tried tweeting it, it's too big to put in 140 characters, but Bob Harlan used to be a very recognized executive for the Green Bay Packers throughout the 80s and 90s. His son is obviously Kevin Harlan, but he also has a son named Brian Harlan, who is Pat Fitzgerald's agent. And then also, if you want to go one step deeper, Mark Murphy, the president and CEO of the Packers, he used to be the athletic director at Northwestern. he actually hired Pat Fitzgerald as the head coach of Northwestern, when a lot of people then in Big Ten country were kind of shaking their head saying he's a little young for that. So there are a lot of connections here with agent, coach, and president. If that was to happen, this might be the only place I could see Pat Fitzgerald leaving Northwestern for.
Now that you now that we've gone through those two teams, I'll ask you about one candidate, and that's Josh McDaniels. If I were him, and obviously I'm a 61-year-old sports writer, not a 43-year-old, whatever he is, offensive coordinator. But if I were him, there's only two jobs that I would be remotely interested in, Green Bay and Cleveland. And the question I would ask myself about Green Bay is twofold. Am I interested in 5 years of Aaron Rodgers, maybe, or maybe 4 years of Aaron Rodgers, or an unlimited horizon with Baker Mayfield? And I would also ask myself, what Aaron Rodgers am I getting? Am I getting a guy who's basically the de facto offensive coordinator who's going to change so much at the line of scrimmage that maybe we won't be such a great fit? I would never mind Aaron Rodgers talking to me and feeling me out about this and then talking to Gutekunst or Murphy, if indeed that were to happen. I would want to talk to Aaron Rodgers and find out, do you want to be coached? Do you want to be coached hard? That would be the biggest question I would have. And so anyway, I guess I would ask you about McDaniels. What do you think his fate is?
I think it's a really interesting thing. And what's his legacy going to be? Does he want to be the successor to Belichick? Because from all indications I get, Belichick is not hanging it up this year. Super Bowl.
Correct.
Like, Belichick's not going anywhere. Just that. That's everything I get. Second thing is he going to just be Tom Brady's offensive coordinator and that's how his career is going to go? And maybe he has a head coaching job with Denver. It didn't work out. And that's Josh McDaniels. Or do you go and prove that I am more than that? I can win with Rodgers as well. And let's go do it there. The Indianapolis thing was a mess from so many different angles. I don't think the full story on that is actually even out there. I feel like he had cold feet, but there was also some issues with, okay, is Luck going to be healthy? Is he not going to be healthy? Who can I bring with me? What's going to happen? And I also think it was a very comfortable situation to walk away from for Josh McDaniels. The Green Bay thing, look, there's no ghost in this one. You know what you're getting. Rodgers makes $35 million. He's going to have a say. He's a very prickly guy when it comes to things not going his way. Do you want to sign up for that? Do you want to chase greatness and be the coach of the Green Bay Packers, which is a really hallowed thing and really valued thing in NFL history?
The one thing I would say about this, and you're raising some good points. I think, and I don't have any firsthand information, but this is me knowing Aaron Rodgers some. I believe that Aaron Rodgers thought that our offense has no imagination. And I want a guy in here. I watch Matt Nagy on TV running a double reverse on the last play of the game against the Giants to tie it, to send it to overtime. I see this weird stuff that Andy Reid is doing, Sean McVay, all of these different things. We don't do anything really offbeat or different, anything to fool defenses. We're doing what we've done. And that's why I mean, look, the one thing about McDaniels that I like a lot is that every week his offensive game plan is a snowflake. Every week, I have no idea what they're going to do. You know, are they going to throw the deep ball? Are they going to dump it, to throw 10 wheel routes? I kind of think that the match between McDaniels and Rodgers would be pretty good.
I like it. And I also think there's this getting to know Josh fairly well over since his Denver years, knowing him a bit. You know, there is this thing where, hey, Sean McVay, offensive mastermind, wunderkind, and ooh, look at all the fun, great things Nagy's doing. And look at what they're doing over there and with the Chiefs and Eric Bieniemy is this great young offensive mind, and even Kyle Shanahan. We don't mention McDaniels much, and I think there is a little bit of him saying, hey, wait a second now. I've been
what
doing
about
this
me?
For all these
yeah.
years,
yeah.
but what about me? You're not the head coach. Until you are the head coach, you're never going to be held in that same conversation as equals to the guys who were the HCs and did it on their team.
Miami Dolphins, not all that surprising, and I'll tell you what has been surprising to me. Jay Glazer said it on Sunday that if Adam Gase is out there, he will skyrocket to the top of lists, and I like Adam Gase. I'm not damning Adam Gase.
I'm with you on this.
He had two quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill and Jay Cutler, and they both. I think they kind of stunk. You know, they weren't very good. The last 21 starts of Ryan Tannehill, he never threw for 300 yards. So, I'm not saying that he isn't a good coach or he can't coach quarterbacks. All I'm saying is that the evidence in the 3 years in Miami is that they didn't have good quarterbacking. You have any clue? Are they going to sort of maybe wait for the Harbaugh shoe to drop in Baltimore and be disappointed and then go to somebody else? Or what do you think?
Yeah, how about the Jim Harbaugh shoe that they've been chasing? It feels like for a decade. Obviously, you know, Stephen Ross is a big Michigan guy. The business school is named after him. And from what I'm told, has been a fan of Harbaugh since way back when Harbaugh got the job with the Niners. But the thing with Gase that's so interesting, and I agree with you, Peter, there's a lot of talk like, oh, wow, that he won't last long on the market. He was very, very prickly this year. And a lot of owners now, it's almost like, give me a guy that I can deal with and I'm not going to get constant pushback with that we can win with. Do I need to? Look, Ndamukong Suh, Jarvis Landry, Jay Ajayi, they were all shipped out because they didn't fit Adam Gase's plan. Those are three really talented players. Was it Gase's fault or was it those guys' fault? Like, can you be a little flexible? So it's really interesting to see what his next gig will be and who he's going to be paired with, because I'll tell you, you know, everyone's saying Denver for Gase, and I know that he obviously had great success there with Peyton Manning and was there with obviously John Elway, but Elway's got thoughts too. And if it didn't go great in Miami with Mike Tannenbaum and Stephen Ross, who are not exactly meddling in the game plan, is that going to be a great fit with him and Elway? Two guys who are pretty stubborn and guys who want things their way. I'm not sure that's a shoe either that fits.
Let's go to Denver. I believe that Elway could go in a lot of different directions, but I do know one thing about John Elway, and this was told to me by somebody close to him, that he wants offensive imagination. He looks at games around the league, and he doesn't see his offense in the last 2 years doing anything other than standard stuff. And so I think whatever happens, whether it be, you know, hiring, I'll give you a name that I'm starting to hear a little bit of, the Eagles quarterback coach Press Taylor, who turns 31 this month. He's going to be a guy who I think has a chance to be an offensive coordinator somewhere and has a very, very outside shot of being a head coach, but that's probably a few years away. I just think Denver is wide open, but does want to open up the offense some.
Yeah, and, you know, if it's not Press, who's the 31-year-old quarterbacks coach in Philly, it's his older brother, Zach who's the 35-year-old quarterbacks coach at the Rams. These are the kind of names you're going to hear. It's the young, who's the young, fresh thing. I heard someone say this week, and, you know, Bieniemy's getting a lot of love in Kansas City. Someone told me this week that I trust that, hey, don't sleep on Mike Kafka. I go, Mike Kafka, the old Northwestern quarterback? Oh, yeah, he's the quarterback coach with Patrick Mahomes right now in Kansas City. He's still in his 20s, I think. And they're saying, hey, I said, head coach? Head coach possibility. I'm like, that's where we're going right now. So, look, Elway, I think the Broncos fit the same thing that Arizona fits, same thing that New York fits, the same thing that a lot of these teams fit. We want to get young. We want to get fresh. We want to get fun on offense. What hurts the Broncos, unlike Arizona, unlike the Browns, unlike the Jets, who is their quarterback and where is he coming from? Because Case Keenum, as great a guy as he is and as much of a bridge quarterback as he might be, is not their quarterback 3 years from now. It might not be their quarterback next year. So to me, that becomes a little bit of an albatross for that team trying to lure away a top coach. I don't know who my quarterback is. And if last year's offseason was an example, they kind of settled on Keenum. They knew they weren't getting Cousins and said, let's go with Keenum. And that really isn't how you want to go about it either.
Arizona.
What a weird situation. Did you get to know Wilkes at all? Wilkes is a good man.
Yeah, he's a very good man.
I feel like he just might have been over his head on this one. And what kills me about this is that, you know, there were no real expectations for the Cardinals this year, but he had a first-year defensive coordinator in Al Holcomb, a first-year offensive coordinator in Byron Leftwich. Like, there was no shot that this guy was going to have any success. But I almost credit the Cardinals for saying, look, we don't view ourselves winning a Super Bowl with Steve Wilkes as our head coach. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off and move on and find the next one. But they have to go offense, and they have to get someone who's going to grow with Josh Rosen. Because Rosen coming out of college, I know a lot of NFL coaches did not like him, not just because of his attitude, but didn't love the way he threw the ball, didn't love his health issues going into college, saying, hey, he got knocked around a bunch at UCLA. So this is another one where we're putting all of our eggs in this Josh Rosen basket. Now we've kind of got to convince someone that a year after we fired a coach after his first year, that this is the place you want to be when there's other openings available.
Tampa Bay and Cincinnati are both, to me, in the same club. I think they're going to have trouble attracting. I know the Bengals are attracting a top-tier coach. And the problem in Tampa is You know, Jason Light is going to do the hiring. If they go 3-13 again, he's probably going to be endangered. So it's they're in a weird situation. The Bengals are, as one person I wrote in my column today referred to it, as the 33rd franchise. And so it's just it's tough going to Cincinnati because they operate so different than other franchises in the league because Mike Brown, the octogenarian owner, is just married to the past. And so anyway, I think both those jobs
actually,
are going to be difficult.
I actually would echo you. Yeah. I think it's different. I think the Bengals are their own situation. And I don't know how to say this. I guess you worked in Cincinnati for years. You know that. Like, let's just say that the Ravens, you walk into the Ravens facility. It's a beautiful castle with the top-notch things and all the stuff you could ever want with all the trimmings. And in free agency, the Ravens are going to spend money on. The Bengals don't operate that way. And their front office staff is very small, and they like stability. And I'm not saying that they're frugal. I don't think that's the case. They do spend money, but you're right. It's from a different era. So I'm going to put them in a totally different box. And Mike Brown, I know for a fact, someone told me, like, if you think Mike Brown reads Twitter or is reading, you know,
he doesn't care.
The latest on what,
he just doesn't care.
Or Hugh Jackson is hired. Trust me, it's not that crazy. Like, he likes you. He knows you. Like, he knows Vance Joseph. Like, this might be the move. Like, let's just do it with something that I know. So that's in one bucket. I would put the Jets and the Buccaneers in a very similar bucket for this reason. Mike Maccagnan saves his job.
Yeah,
he's going to be working with Christopher Johnson to hire the Jason Light saves his job. He's going to be working with Korn Ferry, a consulting firm, to hire. And if you're a head coach walking in and being like, all right, so what exactly have these guys done for me lately? And are they going to be here in 2 years? And what's the deal with the GM? So those are the two that are similar where I'm looking at the whole landscape and saying, all right, GM keeps his job. You fired the coach. Is that a pattern? Is this guy safe? Who's making the decisions, and what can I bring in? And if I do, as a Tampa Bay or Jets coach, kind of put my stamp on things, am I threatening the GM who kind of picked me and also said, you're my guy? It's a very interesting debate of whether you fire the coach and GM at the same time. And in every instance, it seems like this year, they kept the GM and they fired the coach.
Does Mike McCarthy coach in 2019?
I think so. I think there's too many job openings for Mike McCarthy not to get one of them.
Too many job openings that have a quarterback. I think Mike McCarthy should be the next coach of the New York Jets.
Tell me about that decision, because I like it. I think it's a good fit, and I think it hits checks a lot of boxes. But why would you say Jets over, say, the Browns or even the Buccaneers?
Organization more than anything else, and the fact that I trust Sam Darnold a lot more than I trust Jameis Winston right now. And maybe that's because I just haven't seen enough of Sam Darnold, and I've seen a lot of Jameis Winston. And as far as Cleveland, I just get the feeling, and I don't know this. I truly don't know this. I just get the feeling that the Browns, that John Dorsey and Brian Gutekunst, that John Dorsey and Mike
Elliot
McCarthy,
Wolf, John Dorsey,
all those guys, I'm not sure that they view Mike McCarthy as their ideal coach. The Jets need the stability and the organization and the we're doing it this way, everybody get in line of Mike McCarthy. That's in my opinion.
I wouldn't bat an eye if that was the move. I also wouldn't bat an eye, knowing Christopher Johnson just a little bit from these last couple owners' meetings, if he takes some huge swing, and he's the guy that says, all right, you know what? Cliff Kingsbury is an offensive coordinator in college, but everyone seems to speak highly of him. Let's bring him in. He wowed me. All right. Hey, New York City, meet Cliff Kingsbury, a 38-year-old bachelor who's going to be the new head coach of the New York Jets. Like, I could see them going really against the grain also. I don't want to call it safe because Mike McCarthy is
Mike McCarthy would be the safe. He'd be the safe hire. No question about it.
A safe hire. And I'm not sure that's what the Jets necessarily want or need right now in this hiring cycle. Now, that said, you know, look, if they go 10-6 for the next 3 years, Jets fans will never care what was sexy and what was fun. But for the back pages, which does seem to kind of matter right now, I would almost say that they at least need to interview some of these other candidates and not just hire Mike McCarthy out of the gate.
Does John Harbaugh coach the Baltimore Ravens in 2019? And secondarily, does he sign an extension beyond 2019 this offseason?
Can I take everyone behind the scenes a little bit? So
please.
Last Friday, we're recording this on a Monday, we did a production meeting, Mike Tirico, Kurt Warner, the producer Mark Teitelman, myself, with the Baltimore Ravens coaches, and their quarterback, Lamar Jackson, prior to the Chargers-Ravens game. Let me give you the little timeline here. at 1 p.m. Pacific, which is 4 p.m. Eastern, we met with Coach John Harbaugh, and he was fired up for the game. And he said, hey, my future, we don't know what's going to happen moving forward, but you better believe it. These guys are focused on this game against the L.A. Chargers, and we're going to get it done and all this stuff. And literally 2 hours later, Peter, a press release goes out that says, we are bringing back John Harbaugh, and he is working on an extension right now. I can tell you, not saying that I have the ultimate BS detector, I can tell you John Harbaugh at 1 p.m. Pacific, the day that the press release went out 3 hours later, was not under the impression that press release was going out. I feel like they might have been working on something. They might have, but like that one, he would have been pretty honest in saying, hey, we're going to work out something. We're going to make it work. So when that press release goes out, I think it diffuses the bomb in the locker room. It kind of takes it out of the media in the Baltimore Sun, where everyone was calling for Harbaugh's head earlier this year, and says, let's focus on 2018. But what you're asking me is a very valid question. Does that necessarily mean that he's going to be back next year? Because guess what? He might ask for a crazy extension. He might say to the Ravens, hey, the only way I'm going to stay here and do all this again and extend this after we just went on this great run is $10 to $13 million a year, and it might not work out, and then Harbaugh can go and explore the thing. So I can't give you 100% confidence that he's coming back. I will tell you this. He is having a blast with this new Lamar Jackson offense. He's having a blast with his defense. This is Ravens football. It seems like it's the kind of – he's got the team, and they believe in him. But it'll be very interesting because unlike McCarthy or unlike an Adam Gase, which was the report that everyone was lining up, I do believe there will be 3 to 4 teams that would say, without even an interview, we want John Harbaugh to be the next.
Well, the question is, let's just say for the sake of argument that the Ravens go on a little bit of a run here. Let's say they win a couple of playoff games, and let's say they're still playing in 2 weeks when all of these other teams want to be hiring a coach. Do they slow? Pedal the whatever that word is, slow something.
What a great point. Right.
Do they?
You can't really, it's called tampering. This guy's employed somewhere. You can't reach out to him. It's actually a fascinating thing. And does this hurt his chances of getting another gig because he's going so deep with these guys? I will say this about the Ravens. They are so committed right now to this Lamar Jackson offense. And last night, I think we saw a little bit of weakness in it. There's a little flaw on 3rd and 5, and you need a first down in the fourth quarter. You're calling an option pitch to Ty Montgomery. Is this what John Harbaugh is committed to for the rest of his coaching
career? I love this game. I love this game this weekend.
Isn't this fun?
The Chargers have been in the chemistry lab for 4 quarters already. They know what's coming. So it's not like you're playing it for the first time. Yeah, and they played pretty well. They're the only team to hold the Ravens to under 175 yards rushing since Lamar Jackson started starting. I don't know what that means. I think they gained 157 on the ground that day, but it's sort of interesting. I think this is going to be the best game of the weekend.
What's crazy about it is the draw comes out last night, and it's almost like the NCAA tournament draw because you don't know when these teams are playing. And I said it on our Good Morning Football show. The first thing out of my mouth was, wow, they have to play on the road in Baltimore, 10 a.m. local time. They're playing at 10 a.m. when their body clocks think it's 10 a.m. because that's an
that's
early
true,
Sunday 1
but,
p.m. game.
But at least they don't have to play Saturday. You know, I'd rather play 10 a.m. body clock on Sunday with one more night of rest than I would even at night on Saturday. Just me, but anyway.
You're absolutely right. And they've got the 7 days. And like you said, they got worked. They went to the lab. They have it all on film. Is there that much left in the bag for the Ravens, or is it exactly what you expect? And if that's the case, when you have the answers to the test, it's a lot easier taking the test. And they just went through the test. So it's such a fun matchup, too, because the Chargers are not built big on defense. And the Ravens knew that going in the first time they played. Like, we could beat them up on offense because we've got the big offensive line and these big running backs, and they're not built that way. There's no, there is no Brandon Williams or Aaron Donald in the middle that's going to stop the run with the Chargers. It's a lot slighter of a defensive line, but how do you adjust? It's truly a chess match. And truthfully, Peter, I don't know who's going to come out on top because the Chargers seem to play well on the road, and Wisenhunt and Bradley are not dumb guys. They can draw it up as well.
7-1 on the road. They're the only AFC team to win more than 5 road games this year. Peter Schrager, Good Morning Football, Fox Sports. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me.
I love it. Stay tuned. There's more to come.
Thanks to my guests, Chris Sims and Peter Schrager. If you enjoyed these conversations, be sure to listen and subscribe to the other great episodes of my podcast series. There's a lot of them, such as my conversations with John Elway, Adam Schefter, and Roger Goodell. You can find these on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Don't forget to leave a review while you're there. You can also hear the Peter King Podcast on SiriusXM Radio every Saturday morning at 7 Eastern on Mad Dog Sports Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 82. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work. And I'll see you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.